right, you're a firework. That's just how Hefe works. You go up, 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 and you're gonna blow up, up, up.
Love that. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, knowing the trade of everything, gunpowder would be something that would, maybe it's not mass produced as much as it is in like the 1800s, but it's still, I could see like it, like eventually get that knowledge at least.
Just leaving that behind a book of chemistry, though, would have been like crazy.
Also a car that he shows to the blacksmith in the scene. The blacksmith's like, ooh.
Speaking of. So an issue of the magazine Fangoria can be seen in the car's trunk. This was director Sam Raimi showing his gratitude for the publication, including the original The Evil Dead, when it initially premiered. Other items visible in Ash's trunk include a copy of Dark Horse Presents 5th Anniversary Special, originally published in April 91. And this comic includes the very first installment of Frank Miller's Sin City.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it to Sean to know all of the comic book.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so then our villagers do one Mulan fight stance. Huh, ha, huh, huh, like that?
It's effective, but yeah.
And then we're ready to go.
The Deadites approach.
Let's march into battle.
With the best instruments ever.
The bone flute.
The skull drums.
I would call them the bongos.
Okay, but then bagpipe
yeah,
playing.
Did you notice?
One of them had hair.
All three of them have beards.
But no skin.
In the behind the scenes on the DVD, dude is like, I walk up to Sam and I'm like, they have beards, but like no skin. And Sam turns to me and he goes, if you're noticing that, you're not getting the spirit of the movie.
Or if you're concerned by that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the scout comes back and reports to Evil Ash and is just like, you know, it'll be like, we're like 2 days march from the castle. And he's like, awesome. Sally forth, he says.
We're talking to Evil Ash.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought that like before the montage, that's when we find out that they're 2 days away. When they get to Evil Ash is like right at the castle.
They know at the castle that they're 2 days out. But now Evil Ash is finding out from his skeleton scout that they're 2 days away.
I thought that they were right outside. I thought they were right outside the castle when he tells them.
No, he goes, Sally forth.
And then they storm the castle.
Yeah, I guess maybe they are not 2 days out. I guess so. Doesn't matter. He says, Sally forth. Sally forth. His jaw keeps popping out. And then he goes, Sally forth. And then the scout puppet turns around and like,
There's two of them, one who's like an actual, like a person in makeup, and the other is just like a puppet.
And you can tell that the costume one is guiding the other horse.
Yeah.
But also the skeleton being strapped to a horse is like all over the place.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's fantastic.
Right. And as they're approaching the castle, that's when they light wicks on the ends of arrows.
Are we going to discuss Evil Ash's Xena war cry?
Does he do it before the battle? I think that this is the entire battle, and I think he does that later on. But yeah, that was like two years before the Xena war cry. But it's by the same people who do it. So
I don't know the anatomy of where and how or what that came from, but I kind of associate it with indigenous people. So we're just gonna leave that there. Yeah. Acknowledge it, but not engage with it.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, let's go. Let's attack the castle. Let's start with lighting some fuses, like you were saying.
Yeah, they light the fuses, and then Ash is like, steady, steady. And then the lidded fuse goes into one of the, like, this is obviously a bomb arrow, but it goes in, and that's when he says, fire. And like, I'm like, how do you see that? You're on the other edge of it.
Well, and Arthur's like, yeah, fire, fire.
Yeah, because Arthur's like, gotta do this now, or else we're gonna get blown up.
Yeah.
But instead, the skeletons get blown up because skeletons are susceptible to bludgeoning damage.
They have the ability to play bagpipes without lungs, and they're incredibly flammable. These are the things we know about bones that are from the wet earth.
They can also breathe out dust from their mouths.
Yes. They can blow into flutes. The music is really great too.
Oh yeah.
Through all of this.
And like what's great about the skeletons is when they show like skeletons in like one skeleton, then another, all of the skeletons that they show are different.
Yes, because Sam Raimi keeps blowing them up and they have to put them back together with foam every night.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, okay, we got you three skeletons for this. This is what the behind the scenes says. We got you three skeletons for tonight. Well, how many do you have total? We have 40. I'd like to use all 40, please. And then they'd blow them all up and then they'd have to reset for the next night. And I love that. I mean, like, no holds barred. Let's throw it all out there, you know? That's very Raimi.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go again a little harder, Bruce, you know?
The skeletons get a battering ram, and they, so the bridge is pulled up, so they make their own, and then they use a battering ram on it. But before they can even get close, they have these catapults of doom, which are just, like,
giant, giant explosive payloads.
I feel like the gunpowder would do a lot more damage for the size of it. This is, like, the size of, like...
Let's just say, like, a four-year-old.
Or like one of those comedically large bags of flour that you get at Costco.
Yes. Yeah, accurately the size of a 4 or 5 year old.
Right. And it's thrown, and I feel like it would be doing more damage than it actually does.
So the arrows were taking out one or two zombies?
I mean, same difference.
Deadite skeletons at a time. But these larger payloads are taking out 4 or 5. So,
right.
So ratio wise, you would think it would take out more.
Right. But I mean, for the story or the way that the, you know, fight progresses, it makes sense that the smaller ones are going to take out one, bigger ones are going to take out more. So, and you do sometimes see them running away when they see one coming down because they're all flaming.
I do
so
like,
many of these skeletons are flaming, by the way.
I do like with the battering ram that one of the captain or general skeletons says, put your backbones into it.
Yeah.
I love it when a skeleton makes a skeleton bone joke. I don't see that very often, but I love it when I see it.
And that is valid.
Mm-hmm.
No bones about it.
But unfortunately, there's too many of them and they breach the castle. So what does Ash do?
He drives out in his Oldsmobile that has been vetted to look exactly like the, robots we used to watch in the early 90s, that BattleBots. The BattleBots? Do you remember the BattleBots?
Not since last episode.
Oh, did we talk about the last episode?
No.
We didn't talk about...
We talked about bots that battle.
Oh. But the show BattleBots, it was a really good one. It had like a flamethrower, but the really effective ones had either a flippy thing or a spinny thing or a cattle guard looking thing. And this has a cattle guard looking thing and a flippy thing that looks like a windmill strut, and he drives through and he just starts like KitchenAid mixer, like whipping all of these skeletons, and they're like shattering every time.
My note on this car is it's an armored steam powered car of destruction, because it's so effective. He's just mowing through these skeletons and everything until he comes across one person he doesn't want to mow down.
So this, Jen.
Oh, I just wanted to say that part, when we watched the behind the scenes, that Sam wanted to do take after take after take with the car. And they got to a point where they were having to repair as much as they possibly can. And they had to tell Sam Raimi, all we have is dust now. We have no more skeletons to repair. We cannot do another take on the car.
Awesome. And this is a throwback to part one of this 37-part episode. This is the one thing that she does that affects the plot. So in front of him, ethereal, blowing in the wind. Her hair still looks kind of bad, but in that early 90s romance novel sort of way. And you get this, like this very much like, this angel has descended to be among you. She was dead to you. She was stolen from you and has returned to you. He flips the car in order to avoid hitting her. He is thrown. He then approaches her. And she does stand super still as the screen in front of her shows the massacred car or whatever practical effect that was. But he, hold on. Okay. Oh, okay. So she causes a car wreck, and then the Duke shows up.
Right. The whole feeling of the Duke showing up reminds me of when the Rohirrim come to Helm's Deep. So my note says Henry shows up with Gandalf the White.
Accurate.
Also, I think you could have replaced Sheila with a sexy lamp and he still would have had the same emotional reaction.
Oh no, that beautiful lamp is about to be crushed by a car. So let's... Oh, Bruce is trying to get to the top of the building.
Because Evil Ash has made his way up to where they believe the book is.
But he's pushed over the ladder, and rather than use the stairs, he decides to grab a rope.
The rope elevator is going to be a lot quicker.
Okay, so my favorite part is there's like a half-crushed skeleton who's like crawling around the ground.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to get you. I'm going to cut your gizzards out, is what he says, right? And he goes to slash Ash's Achilles tendon,
yeah.
Right? But Ash slashes the rope, ascends vertically very yeah. fast, and a payload of whatever is being pulled lands directly on the skeleton and squashes him flat.
Yeah.
I do like how all of this is like one very gory game of capture the flag.
Sheila comes back again.
Yes.
And I think this is when she says the line, you found me beautiful once.
Honey, you got real ugly.
So I think they tussle. She tries to stab him a whole bunch, and there's like a whole bunch of stabbing things.
Right,
that's really funny.
And he ends up stabbing her. And,
does he stab her?
Yeah, and throws her over the edge.
Oh, I think he might. I don't think he stabs her, but I do think he flips her and makes her pass out.
He looks like he's stabbing her with some. Maybe he's like bracing a piece of wood because he has a piece of wood later on. So maybe he's not stabbing her with the wood, but just kind of like throwing
her. It's a quarter staff. So I think he gets it under her and like flips her.
Yeah.
Because
in her gut.
Yeah, well, that's fine. It's fine. Because it turns out, like, if you get, like, cut, stabbed, or shot as a deadite, you get, like, so many lives, and you get to come back. And if you get healed, which is never clear on how or why that is effective or not effective, you don't have any of those injuries again.
All right. Well, we don't have to have it explained to us.
You know what? Just let it be what it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Ash goes after Evil Ash, and my note is sword beats wood.
Okay, but then Evil Ash gets the upper hand and goes to stab him in the face. And for once, he uses the correct hand and stops it from stabbing him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And we can stare at the blade over his eyeballs for a minute, which is a thing I nearly always love.
Yeah, and the whole point of this is they're trying to keep the deadites away from the book.
Which is up in the tower, locked in a little metal box. Not a metal box, a little caged nook.
Right. Evil Ash is like getting close to it. I think at one point he pries the bars off the top, but then Good Ash or Gun Ash goes ahead and like chucks a spear at him.
Yes. And so now we get to some of the best choreography in this entire film. And what Bruce Campbell said at the event we went to was that it was so specifically choreographed that it was done in certain beats. So you'd be like, one and I flip, and two and I dodge, and three and I bounce, and four and then I roll. And they had to be precise because you're doing these other motions that counteract that. Like, I stab the ground and you're not there, and I stab the ground and you're not there, right? And so they did it so many times. Like, he supermaned through this. If nothing else lands for you, his great delivery on these really hokey, like, these
Like Evil Ash says, you're going down, and Ash says, I'm going up, and he goes up the stairs.
Yes, yes, yes. These kind of himbo-y lines throughout the entire film.
He is like a gruff himbo.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite anti-hero, for sure. But if you can't appreciate any of that, you have to appreciate the dedication he has. I mean, when I mentioned his super famous flips, right? Like, he's really good at that. But then to also be able to incorporate that into a sometimes dozens of sequences for a certain scene, you know, somebody's off screen counting, you know, movement 13, movement 14, movement 15 movements, and he's hitting all of these different, fighting multiple people at once. I'm just floored by it. Just absolutely just, it's too good.
It is a really well-crafted choreography scene. At one point, Evil Ash goes to stab Gun Ash, and he gets one of the other deadites because he's fighting two at once, and he's like, two, 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 two.
Yes.
Then the second guy goes down, and then both Ashes have swords, and they're like, two, 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 two.
I believe we are very close, if we had not already passed it, Ted Raimi 3.
The swordman with an eye patch? Yeah, that's number three. Swordman with an eye patch.
Because there's another guy fighting in the same area.
Yeah, I don't remember specifically. I just wrote that it was Ted okay. Raimi number three.
Somewhere in this fight scene, we have a third viewing of Ted Raimi as a swordman with an eye patch.
Yes. And now, through flipping and pushings and like being blasted and coming back, we have Evil Ash, who is now entirely skeletonized.
Yeah, he gets like tossed off the ledge and then like comes back up. He's full skeleton, but he has eyes.
He's got white eyes. Mm-hmm. And Bruce has a brown eyes. not that I noticed. I noticed. Okay, so they fight. So Evil Ash is like, I've got the book now. And Bruce falls off the thing.
Yeah, like a torch gets thrown off the side first and it lights a...
It was metal. He was using it as a weapon.
But it was fire and it lights one of the catapults that has a bomb in it. And then he goes down. And that's when Evil Ash grabs the book and he like lands on the catabomb.
He cannot help but brag about it. Mm-hmm. This is part of the evil part of Evil Ash is that he has the part of Ash that's like, look what I did and I've got it and I'm going to rule this world and it's going to be full of deadites and I did it and you suck and I rule.
Yeah.
That's not verbatim what happens.
But in the spirit it is.
We ignite the payload.
Mm-hmm.
And
he knocks his
hand off
with a sword. And that's when he, and then with that same sword, he swipes at the catapult and launches it. And he launches Evil Ash skeleton
but
up there.
There's a moment where Evil Ash notices what's happening and he goes, oh, and his skull pops up like a steam whistle. Did you notice that? He goes, oh, and like the steam whistle scream. And then he flies up in the air and then he explodes.
Yeah, like a firework.
Cause deadite, you're a firework. That's just how Hefe works. You go up, 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 and you're gonna blow up, up, up.
Love that. And then Sheila's back to normal.
A sweet embrace occurs. And then we have a big, then Henry's men group up and
Arthur's men
group up. And we have like a us versus them moment. But then the kings approach each other and embrace. And we're like, truce. And Bruce is like, aha, as he embraces.
Yeah.
And they're all like, aha. And there's like jovialness.
Mm-hmm.
End scene.
I think what's interesting about this is that in order for bigotry to not take hold in a population, it's almost like the leaders need to curb that idea of bigotry.
Or they have to find a third party to unite against.
Well, sometimes, like, we are, as humans, we're very much us versus them, in-group, out-group mentality. Mm-hmm, That's very common for us. So you have to be aware of it. But, like, if the third party is, like, some supernatural force that ultimately wants you all dead, and you know they're not humans because they're skeletons coming out of the ground.
Well, that really kind of defines them as human. Skeletons as humans.
Not animated skeletons.
Okay.
Like, I mean, when was the last time you looked at a skeleton?
Right now I am an animated skeleton. I just happen to be fleshy.
First of all, I'm a meat popsicle. There's a difference.
I'm a haunted meat puppet, so.
Yeah, but you're not a skeleton because you've still got meat on you.
A very, very wet skeleton inside of me.
When you die, you're going to be dry Naomi.
I'll be dry aged Naomi. Perfect with a peignoir.
Anyways, so.
Feel free to eat my corpse. Anyways. We do have Sheila happily intermingling with these guys. And my notes are like, they still killed your brother like a day ago, 2 days ago.
Well, that's what Arthur says. We have no reason not to believe him. But what if it was a deadite and Arthur just didn't see it and he just assumed?
Oh, yeah.
Because they knew they were
evil things. Yeah. They just thought they belonged to the other guys.
Well, at one point, Arthur does say that Henry and his men are no better than the deadites, which is why I'm like, Arthur's kind of promoting bigotry amongst people who...
Are you saying that English nobility doesn't have the integration of their peoples at heart?
I mean... Is it a controversial statement for me to say that?
I don't think so.
No, because...
Well, not here.
Not here.
Yeah, I think it might actually be against the law in England, but also we can't threaten a president and I...
Well, you can't threaten a president with bodily harm. You can threaten a president with legal harm, especially if that president has, you know, participated in creating an uprising or an insurrection over
know.
The last,
wow,
like, couple of years.
That sounds like something that would never happen.
In America? In Leota's America? In Leota's America. Okay. My goodness.
I love that. Applauders, Leota's my mother. And this is Leota's America. And she wouldn't stand for that. Okay, so the wizard says, drink this, say the words, and be exact.
Yeah, it's a callback. It's a callback to when he didn't say the words right earlier.
Because he's a big old dummy.
And we hear the narration. Like, the narration starts at the beginning. If you're going to do narration in a movie, I would say this is the best way to do narration, because you have a little bit at the beginning and then you have a little bit at the end, but you do see him talking to the fourth.
Hold on a second. He has his tearful goodbye with Sheila, and they kiss, and he climbs on a horse. He rides away. She watches him go. He doesn't look back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is his whole MO. El Jefe never looks back.
Right. Again, he is completely forgotten about Sheila because she is not in his line of sight.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't turn back. Okay, so now my notes go, Ted Raimi number 4.
Did you say the words right this time?
That's what he said. Okay, so now we're in H Mart.
Yeah, and we're in S Mart.
Sorry, yeah, H Mart is my favorite store. Dang it. I like to get them nudes at H Mart, you know what I'm saying? I shop smart and I shop H Mart, but I also shop smart shop S Mart.
Yeah.
I got produce there.
They do.
Okay, sorry. Distraction. Now we're back at H. Now we're back at S Mart, and Ted Raimi is just like you said. Did you say the words right this time?
Do you have a button for it, Jen?
Not for this.
All right. Did you say the words right this time?
Maybe not exactly word for word, but like mostly, yeah, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, he says basically. I said them. Yeah, basically.
Which didn't work last time, freaking Johnny Bravo. What? Why do you think it would work this time?
Again, we see this moment where he's very, like, very much lying, and he's very sheepish about it, but he's still trying to, like, make himself, like, look confident and everything, but it's very obvious that he can't. It's kind of, it reminds me of when he did it last time. It was just sort of like, no, I totally did it. It was just right. Ugh.
So then he's pricing toasters and other Linda...
This is third love interest that has been mentioned in this film. I don't think we have a name.
That's why I'm calling her Linda number
3.
Probably 4 at this point. Mm-hmm. She's all like, I think that story you tell is actually kind of cute. And he's like, uh-huh, right? And then women do be throwing themselves at him all the time, and deadites do it at the same time.
Again, this is a deadite that I think is... coded as a female.
Oh, it's a woman.
It's a woman.
It
yeah.
See
so
that blouse?
This is like the fifth time I've seen a woman get turned into a deadite in this movie.
At one point, he pushes her away, and she like bounces off of a trampoline,
mm-hmm.
and does somersaults. And
yeah.
And then he like holds up the gun, because of course he like smashes it out of a case, and he goes, "Lady, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store."
My note is, deadites are back, and so is Ash.
Yes, I'm Ash. Housewares.
Oh, and at one point, she does that whole rainbow flip over him, and there's mm-hmm. a shootout, which is very similar to something that happened in our last episode, Transformers with Optimus Prime.
We do like the rainbow jumping.
Yeah, I mean, Optimus was shooting at people underneath him, and Ash was shooting at someone above him, but it's still pretty, like, flip, rainbow flip. And then shoot out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she's shot dead, lands with her eyeballs open, so we're pretty sure she's dead. He's standing on like the checkout, and he grabs up.
Because the lady is on the floor, and he like lifts her up, or he like grabs her by the hand and then grabs her by the waist.
And then he says,
"Sure, I could have stayed in the past. Could have even been king. But in my own way, I am king. Hail to the king, baby."
Okay, so when I watched this twice today, I saw him kind of bring out his tongue. And Naomi, like, did that just now while she was mimicking him. Like, it was great. But it was great.
I don't want to see your tongue. There's very few times I want to see your tongue touch somebody else's mouth.
Did you see it in this movie?
No, I assumed.
I saw it kind of come out a little bit. And it was not unattractive. It was actually very attractive.
It's very attractive. Yeah. I'm not a big chin person, but he's got a nice chin and like great eyebrows. You know, I'm all about somebody with great eyebrows.
His autobiography is called
"A Chin Could If Chin Could Kill."
If Chins Could Kill.
I bought it and then I lent it to my dad before I read it, and then I never got it back. I meant to buy it again. That's not the one we listened to on tape, was it? We listened to something else.
No, I think it was "If Chins Could Kill." Mm.
Well, the soundtrack is announced as done by Elfman as we watch the credits. The Shemps are mentioned and like
That's pretty much it. That's the last line of the movie. Hail to the King, baby.
Yes. Yeah. And scene. Do we have any more Sean facts, darling?
The original ending where Ash's attempt to return to his original time, causing him to end up in a post-apocalyptic England, was deemed too depressing by test audiences. Universal ordered a new ending, which was more heroic and involved a shootout with the S-Mart, at the S-Mart, where Ash gets the girl.
The alternate ending, the last line is, I went to the wrong time! I slept too long! So again, lots of tongue, but not in the same way.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen, maybe this is actually my shock, but I would have liked to have seen Ash in post-apocalyptic world.
But then I never would have gotten Ash versus Evil.
That's true.
And that really did, like, love letter sign it off for all of it.
Yeah. He does do the voice in the most recent Evil Dead multiplayer game. He recorded some new voices, but that's... what he was telling us at Bruce Fest was that's the end. That's the end of Bruce.
Yeah.
Of Ash.
Yeah. It's not the end of Bruce Campbell. He's probably immortal.
Yeah, he probably...
He will live forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of the Necronomicon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used it the right way. He wasn't like the archaeologist who translated it poorly and, you know, ended up turning it evil.
The Necronomicon was always evil. It's bound in human flesh and written in blood.
I was thinking it would have been better if it was like a white archaeologist taking something that, you know, wasn't a part of his culture.
Ooh, yeah.
And then he like mistranslates it and then it turns it evil.
Yes.
Was this representation of why you shouldn't go ahead and steal artifacts from other cultures without understanding what it is?
I really would have liked Tutankhamun's curse to be real.
Mm-hmm.
Just like.
Just... Yeah, stop colonialism in its tracks in the early 1900s.
I was watching a thing that was like, if the British Museum, like the National British Museum or whatever it's actually called, gave back all of the artifacts from the countries that it stole them from, they'd lose like 2/3 or more of their collection.
Yeah, that's why they shouldn't have a collection at all.
Yeah.
Or they could fit it with like modern, you know, artifacts, like actually show things not just from England, but like the progression of it throughout English time. There has to be like a bunch of stuff that they could go ahead and just be like, yeah, this is
there's enough white person garbage to fill a museum. Let's give everybody else's
back to them.
Colonized countries their shit back.
Right.
There is a John Oliver on that.
Yeah, it's good.
So a couple more things to close us out. A new Evil Dead film entitled Evil Dead Rise, written and directed by Lee Cronin and starring Alyssa Sutherland, Lily Sullivan, Gabriel Eccles, Morgan Davies, Nell Fisher, and Mia Shalas is set to release theatrically April 21st, 2023. just coming up here.
Yeah, it's just a couple weeks away, guys.
It's almost like Jen had that planned.
It's almost like I actually didn't realize that this year is the 30th anniversary of Army of Darkness.
We have the kismetist podcast where we accidentally release stuff when it's relevant.
Army of Darkness comics that have Ash interacting with other pop culture stars include...
Drumroll? You need a little drumroll?
No, there's like 10 here. Darkman versus Army of Darkness. Army of Darkness versus Reanimator. Army of Darkness, Ash versus the Classic Monsters. Marvel Zombies versus the Army of Darkness. Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, which...
We wanted that to be a movie.
Yeah. A Xena versus Army of Darkness.
No, thanks.
Kiss Army of Darkness.
No. Sorry, Sean.
Vampirella and Army of Darkness.
Yes.
Army of Darkness and Bubba Hotep.
So we didn't stay to watch that because he left, but Bubba Hotep is so good.
Applauders for those of you who are not in the know. Bubba Hotep was a movie that was done with Bruce Campbell, and it was essentially if Elvis was alive and just living in an old folks home. But then he there's talking about Egyptian pyramid curses.
Yes.
Yeah. There's like a mummy that comes back to life and he has to fight it.
It's gorgeous.
I remember only watching it once, but like it's one of those things where it just feels so iconic, even though I can't remember anything outside of just how wonderful.
I would watch that movie 10 times on repeat rather than watch the new glorifying Elvis movie that I know people love it. Your mother loved it. I just think of Elvis as a guy who like tried to shack up with a 14-year-old and like appropriated black people's music. So
right.
Good. Good. Thanks.
He's not the king of rock and roll in my book, because the queen of rock and roll is Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Hell yeah, she wails.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't wail with her voice. She wails with the guitar.
Yes.
Like, it's amazing. Like
you cannot deny that is the root.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is that all for Sean Facts?
That's all for Sean Facts.
So then we only have to get into the shocks and the applause.
So, Jenny, you picked. So do you want to go first or last or first, second, third, last? Do you want to put us in order?
Let's start with me on just the shocks first.
Okay.
Do you want to end with the applause?
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll go around to Naomi and then you on shocks and then me on applauds.
Great, because my shocked moment is going to get a little bit depressing, but my applaud moment is great. So.
Okay. Mine is very simple and very short. It's that there's like one woman character and then ugly villager women characters and then the booby ladies. And that's it. Yeah, it's really that simple. I'm mad about the women. Raimi's so good at so many things, but adding diverse, well thought out women. He did okay in the last Doctor Strange, right?
I would say that's Star. I wasn't a huge fan of that movie because it didn't like take Wanda from where she was at the end of WandaVision. Mm. And it just sort of like redid that whole arc.
Mm.
I think that he does do, I mean, as a Xena warrior princess stan, I would say that he has those complex characters, those complex female characters in Xena. Mm-hmm. But I know that Lucy Lawless was a producer. She was heavily involved. Mm-hmm. So I think she was heavily involved. So she was probably guiding a lot of like Xena's redemption arc, which is where that show starts off. Is she's like, I want to be a good person. And then she has to like kind of find ways that aren't, you know, her normal bag of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she meets up with Gabrielle, which Gabrielle is like a nerd. She's smart, but then she grows. Like Gabrielle is probably the like as far as complex characters go, or like well-written characters with arcs.
I don't know about you, but I identified with Gabrielle. Like mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, no, if I showed up, I'm not physically skilled, but I am a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And I could definitely fall behind a strong female lead.
But what happens is she grows into a strong fighter.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Like, we grew with her.
Right.
In that way.
In a lot of ways, she is the audience surrogate. But as far as like taking her from that sort of like, you know, puppet of the audience mm-hmm. into her own character, mm-hmm. I think that is a good example of women empowering women. And it's a great, that show had to have passed the Bechdel test at least one time every episode.
Yeah. And this.
Doesn't
like literally the only women who are talking near each other around each other are still dancing around Bruce Campbell saying mm-hmm. like we're children, ha ha ha, rocks, potatoes. All right, what's yours, Jen? Oh wait,
I want to hear from Lydia first.
Okay, my shocked moment actually goes into what Naomi's saying, but it's more like all of the humans that get turned into deadites are all women.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that could very easily be said. And I'm not saying that Sam Raimi would not tell this kind of a story. I think it would, or disagree with this kind of a story, but I don't know if he's the right person to kind of talk about it. So if you see all of the humans that get turned into deadites, they're all women.
The majority,
and
yes.
The way that the way that we're shown that they get turned into deadites is through some sort of sexual assault. With Sheila, with
the kiss definitely does it.
I mean, like, it seems like it would be through non-consensual physical affection.
Well, this is
affection
this
in
is,
quotes.
In the other movies, there is an instantaneous possession. And the fact, I think maybe he was aiming at women being an unexpected evil. But the truth is, it just makes all the women look evil.
But here's the thing, like, I mean, it looks, I mean, if you're taking at it from that kind of a perspective, then you could very easily say that women who are victims of sexual assault are turn into monsters. But here's what I would say. When you see that Sheila, if we're just taking like Sheila herself,
mm-hmm.
she's kind of turned into this deadite queen.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was through sexual assault, then ultimately stopping the person who, you know, did that to her. Kind of like it turns her back into a human being. It's like recognizing that victims of sexual assault can be powerful. I mean, it's ultimately a man saving her. But if you take it as though the Deadites are the patriarchy,
and I do,
then Ash is actually a really good foil for it, even though he has flaws, because he's, I mean, outside of the whole machismo, you know, like I'm going to beat him up with punches and everything. I think it's interesting having a man come in to destroy the Deadites in an effort to, you know, save not just the people. If you're seeing the Deadites as the patriarchy, then the only thing that can really dismantle the patriarchy are, or like one element of dismantling the patriarchy is men, you know, fighting against that. And in this case, it's a very physical fight.
Yeah.
So it's very like it wouldn't be like you can't stop the patriarchy with guns, because guns are the patriarchy. But if you're looking at it through just like a cheesy, campy kind of a lens, then it kind of, you can kind of see it fit a little bit. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think what I would add to that particular conversation is that, because you're talking about how a dude's taking out some dudes and the patriarchy is an example of that. Until the thing that is the problem starts to fight the things that's the problem isn't getting solved yet.
Right.
Right? So, for example, on this Leota's planet, we've in the United States have problems in largely white policings, right? Until white guys who are policing with other white guys who are abusing that power start keeping each other in check, we have not begun fixing that problem. So, and for the broader example of patriarchy, until white men start keeping other white men in check, we have not really made any dent in the patriarchy.
Right. That being said, you can't dismantle a system using the tools of the oppressors of that system.
Amen.
So it's not like a fully formed, but I was like, when I was watching this movie, I was like, okay, so like, they're all women. So what's like, and then seeing everything that happened with Sheila, it's like, okay, so is that what, cause like, isn't there like in the first Evil Dead movie, a rape scene with a tree that turns a woman into a Deadite?
Yes.
It doesn't turn something else. I mean,
well, she escapes,
eventually
right?
Turns.
So she does get abused by a tree, but she escapes back to the cabin, and then she has a spontaneous possession.
Okay.
But she's obviously super fractured by the whole thing.
Attack, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely the most fragile person, I feel like, in the entire film.
Right.
Did they repeat it in the second one? Yeah, it was too far.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone I've shown the first one, that's the scene that goes too far.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely where they pulled it back for the second and have nothing approaching it in this one, except for maybe the kit.
Right. Which, I mean, could very easily just be seen as just a kiss.
Yeah.
Because we don't see anything else. It's just with when you see the other women being like carted off after it and they're naked and they're like, we got big plans for you. It feels to me very gross. Mm-hmm. Like it's supposed to, you know, it's not supposed to be like, you know, tongue in cheek in this one scene. It's very like they do kind of treat it as a more serious approach, but it's still like seeing that was just kind of how my brain worked. And I was like kind of shocked that it could be used for like, you know, maybe you could turn it into something good and maybe you can justify that dubious consent.
This movie is not to be meant to be taken serious.
Yeah, I know. And I'm reading too much. I'm overthinking aggressively.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
And that is okay. And I love opening those kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. Jen, what is your deal?
I just wanted it to be longer. That's all.
You're like, 81 minutes is not enough.
I know that it was all storyboarded out and planned out ahead of time, as Sam Raimi is very intricate before
he makes
day
money
one.
Because he like, you know, has all of his like eyes dotted and stuff, even if he is blowing up all of the skeleton.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know exactly where I would put that length. I would maybe like a little bit more transition of him just becoming sort of a member of the kingdom, like before he starts going out to get the Necronomicon to actually just spend some time with the village a little bit more.
Building rapport.
Yeah. I say village, but I mean, you know, king. Yeah. People inside of the...
I would have liked to see that pillar.
Yeah.
Sorry. He did all that working out. In the credits, he had like a personal trainer. I'm like, well, then let me see that chest.
Would you have preferred more fight scenes, or do you think the fight scenes are just the right amount?
I think that that's executed incredibly well. For the budget that they had, for the technology that was available during that time, I would not like to see this turned into a CG movie.
Sammy, wow, we've gotten real familiar. He's so dedicated to practical effects where he can do them, and it makes everything feel so much more real.
I also felt that the way that he's able to scale just what he has available with the army to make it look like it's a lot bigger than it actually is was very well executed. There really is no arch to any character in this movie. Like, Ash is the same Ash going in and coming out, and nobody really has any...
King Arthur and King Henry come to a understanding.
But how long does that last? Because knowing English history probably doesn't last longer than a month. Like, we had that truce, but since everything is, you know, fine, very much like Ash with the women that he partakes of, you know, if it's not in our field of sight, we do not know it exists.
Where did you get all that land? I could have sworn that land belonged to me, the British.
I would have liked to have contributed a little bit more to the discussion of the lack of female empowerment, or the image that is portrayed in not just this movie, but the other Evil Dead movies. But I think you laid it out pretty well. And every once in a while, Sam Raimi seems to get a little bit like two steps forward and one step back on that sort of deal. Like, Drag Me to Hell was a really great female lead. But it also had this, so there is a Romani character in there that is very just harshly represented as this evil character, evil woman, and with this magical ability or this, you know.
Oh, Stephen King did it Doctor Sleep too, a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
The chick was real witchy.
Yeah, they had this whole nomadic Romani vibe, or like the stereotypical, it was the stereotype of the Romani. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... yeah, he does some things, and then it's like, okay, well.
How can I show an untethered woman?
And like, if
I have it.
I mean, if you're going to, if anyone out there is going to portray me in a witchy like state, I want to be a swamp witch. Mm-hmm. I want to be out in the middle of nowhere. I want there to be like, you know, hot steam coming off. I'd like humid, like unnecessarily humid. Mm-hmm. Maybe you got like, you know, wilted trees and everything.
I want, Dirk Gently's detective agency. Dirk Gently's
holistic.
Okay, so that's how I remember what holistic is. So if I were to be portrayed as a swamp witch, which is the vibe, I would want to have this sort of holistic, playing with mud and like building. Like, oh, I accidentally discovered magic, and that's how I've built my skill, and then that's how I'm like. Well, let's get to the contusion of this abuse fest.
Jen, do you want to start with your applaud moment?
Sure. I think I've mentioned most of my applauds for this. It really does come down to the production quality, especially, I guess, between 1 and 2, there's a serious upgrade in production quality. And between 2 and 3, there's a serious production quality increase. And that isn't just Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi found some very, very brilliant people in makeup and animatronics and puppetry and all of these things. When we were watching the making of stuff, and Greg Nicotero is talking about it, he says, it doesn't matter if you're in puppetry, you had to think as a producer and as a director and as a puppeteer or animator, and all of these. You had to wear several hats no matter what you were doing in that movie. And when it does gel, it's what they refer to as Hollywood magic. It's the ability for 24 different pictures in a second coming to life into this great thing that we call theater. So it really does come down to just how great this one sticks in my mind, even surpassing the first and the second one. For me.
In lots of ways, yeah.
Yeah.
Naomi.
Jen. Okay, mine is stupid and short, because that's how my shocked and applauds tend to be. How much joy this movie has brought to me and us over the years. Like, it is a continuously rewatchable movie. It is continuously quotable. I have several articles of clothing that feature this movie. I have art on my walls that is from this movie. I have my picture with Mr. Campbell right there, and Jen's in it too, wearing a shirt with Bruce Campbell's face on it in the picture, which is fantastic. And I it happens sometimes when you like learn more about something that you enjoy. Oftentimes I'll find the rotten apple that ruins it for me, which is kind of what this podcast is all about in one half of it. But I've not found anything about this movie that makes me like just want to wash my hands.
Right.
You know, like as much as I do like more women in lots of more visible, fully developed places, this movie is not necessarily the vehicle for that. And we're doing more of that now so I can enjoy that and appreciate it. But like, for what it is and who it has, and the like Jen was saying, a really gifted director surrounds themselves with gifted people that just enhance the entire craft. And so like, just, it's so shareable and watchable and quotable and funny and a little dramatic, but the soundtrack's cool, and like the slapstick just slaps literally, like I could not. I mean, there are movies that I think are like even greater crafted, but that doesn't mean this one isn't fantastic. There are things that are better acted, but that doesn't mean that this isn't well done with acting and such. So it's a good, solid, homey meal with my food metaphors again. I'm sorry, but like I feel sustenance in this, and so I over the years, having watched it so many times in so many different ways, which would have ruined it, other movies for me like that, because I just get oversaturated. I've never had that.
Much like the Transformers, it's got to rewatch.
All right. So my applaud moment is the progression of camp throughout the fight scenes. I like how it starts off relatively serious. Maybe it's a little bit goofy. But then as it gets further and further into it, you get the more and the more Stooges aspect. And even that last fight, I mean, it ended on the bad guy getting thrown up into the air and then exploding. How much more?
With a whistle stop for his skull.
So it's just, I love the progression of the fight scenes and how it gets campier and campier as it goes. So it's like the movie knew what it was aiming for. It knew the tone that it needed to, because like, this is like a serious property. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, like one of those, like, what am I trying to say? Like one of those medieval historical, you know, documentaries, or like a historical drama. It, like, this would not work as a historical drama. Not really.
No.
I mean, they have skeletons getting raised from the dead.
Yes.
They have skeletons playing a bone flute and bongos.
Bongos. And the bagpipes.
Mm-hmm.
You will notice, and I hope you do, I think that if you give the first two movies a chance, and you should, mm-hmm. especially if you liked this, getting to see the birth of this from that, you'll notice that this movie, they truly knew what they had at this point. They knew they wanted a himbo kind of guy, and they knew they wanted like a himbo type guy, and they wanted humor, and like Jen was saying earlier, this ability to go from serious to humorous and like break that tension and then like recreate that tension. You see someone who's very good at film finally get to recognize what it's like. Oh man, no more food metaphors. As an artist hones their craft, you can see the influences from before come to the fruition of them truly knowing their craft. And so we get to see it almost in real time as we see these movies go along. And this really is the fulcrum of Sam Raimi's coming into being the director that we know him as today.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So I think that's everything for the podcast.
For my birthday month, you guys.
Plotters, you made it through the month. You made it through the month of March. Congratulations. You're probably feeling warmer. Sun's coming out.
Top of the bearded skeleton of you. And the rest of the dead as well.
Yeah. Yeah. This cake from Naomi's birthday party.
Beautiful.
It's good.
That's great. I am 40.
That's not a bad thing. I'm 40. I turned 40 last year.
And it looks good on you.
Only when I'm well rested and I have had a lot of water. You should, applauders, you should drink as much water and get as much rest as you can.
Well, look for my outro for a couple of additional notes for you to catch us on other things. And as always, we're here for you. So
reach out.
If you need to give us any commentary and you don't want it to be a public review or rating, then send us an email at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com.
Generally, we do read those emails. So if you don't want it on, you know, the public's, if you don't want the public to know, you just want to share it with us. That's great, too. We'll share it between each other.
Yeah, we will. And if you'd like to, you know, rate us on wherever you rate things, like, just go ahead. We don't have any ratings on Spotify yet. You have to listen to an episode off of Spotify before you can review it, or I would have done it already. My podcast is pretty good. But I listen on Apple. But I'd love to see a new review out there.
Until next month, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, Applauder, for joining us for part 3 of our discussion of 1992's Sam Raimi film, Army of Darkness. We hope that you've enjoyed our plot walkthrough, Sean Facts, and the hidden audio track of incantations that let loose the hordes of hell. Kidding. If you're not dead tired from listening to us, we have some recommended podcasts for you. Collateral Cinema recently reviewed the Mel Brooks classic Spaceballs. And That Song from That Movie has an episode discussing Lady Gaga's award-winning Hold My Hand. You can find links to these episodes in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and goody-goody-two-shoes, Jen! Do you find yourself battling with your phone when we get something wrong or just have a juicy detail that we might have left out? You can email us at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com or visit us at shockedandapplaud.com to leave us feedback. We'll probably even read your comments on our next episode, even if that evil version of you is the one who wrote the message. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll return next month for a brand new episode. It's Lydia's choice, and I think it's definitely one that you'll geek out with us about. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
I got news for you, pal. You ain't leading but two things right now.
See this?
Jack and
Groovy.
Jack left town.
Is my
first you want to kill me. Now you want to kiss me.
Give me some sugar, baby.
Klaatu Varata Nikta. Klaatu.
Honey, you got real ugly.
Well, that's just what we call pillow talk, baby.
Good. Sure, I could have stayed in the past.
I'm the guy with the gun.
Could have even been king. But in my own way, I am king.
Hail to the king, baby.